Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to an NAWC special right here on Spectre One. I'm Carl Chenier. I'd like to introduce our hostess, Nikki Heyman, who will talk about what we're going to talk about right now. Nikki?
Thank you, Carl. What we're talking about is that ESPN, who has long since turned away from their wrestling ways, had the opportunity to give us a very down-to-earth, very human story about the man, the myth, and the legend that is Ric Flair. And it was a very well-produced event where we went to go look for Richard Flair. Or does he exist anymore? Because apparently he disappeared somewhere in Minnesota. And I'm not going to say I blame Vern Gagne.
Nope.
But seeing what this is a wonderful look at the toll to a man who loves this business does outside of the ring. And have, you know, people here to discuss it with me, of course, Jason Block, who has watched the documentary.
Yes, I have. And I watched it with my father last night live, and we were stunned at the brutal honesty of it.
Mm-hmm. And somebody who needs to watch it, I presume, would be Bad News Beeman.
Who'll be back in a little bit. He's got some family.
Okay. So this was essentially a pair of interviews, one that was done before Rick got sick and then one after he had gotten sick.
So 2015 and April this year.
Yeah. So, but they were very seamless. I mean, the first part of the documentary, we got to see the creation of Ric Flair, how he just, you know, he wasn't a book smart guy. You know, he was a jock.
Yeah, he had stated, he was asked, why did you go to the University of Minnesota? He said, because Michigan didn't accept me.
Yeah.
He ran track, played a little bit of football, and he was a big boy. He was a big boy. And he was the son of a doctor? Dentist?
Well, adopted son of a doctor. He toyed with the idea of being a dentist, but he's not a book guy.
Yeah.
So he ends up going, you know, he ends up falling into this wonderful, crazy circus of a business. And it definitely was still very circus in the late 60s, early 70s when he got involved and, telling the story of how Vern was training everybody.
That was interesting. Not the performance center by any stretch of the imagination.
I dare the evil boss, Dr. Levesque, to set something up to see if any of these guys today can do that.
Carrying people up and down stairs.
Go up and down the stairs, fireman carry somebody up and down the stairs, have his buddy fireman carry him up and down the stairs, and then do the wheelbarrow up and down the stairs. That don't get you in shape. Nothing will.
Yeah, you can't pay anybody enough money for that nowadays.
No. So, but, you know, Rick grew into this character, but it really didn't happen until we almost lost him.
Yeah, they chronicle the first couple of years where he didn't look nothing like he did in the 80s at all. He was a bit bigger and a little bit heavier.
Mm-hmm. He'd mentioned he was towing the 300-pound line before the plane crash. And I'm having trouble, even with the pictures, I still had trouble framing that.
Yeah, it was a bit odd.
because we're used to seeing him. I think he ran about what, 240?
Yeah, he ran. Yeah,
after,
he ran
after the accident.
And all the rehab and all the, you know, all of the work he had to put in just to get back.
So it took about 6 years.
And that's an eternity in wrestling time.
So you figure from 75 to 81 before he began his first world title run, yeah.
And, you know, we get to see, you know, we get to see bits and pieces of matches. We get to hear his opinion about, you know, working with Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, that was a good segment.
And I, you know, I really wish Dusty was still here because I would have loved to have heard his side of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there was that they showed us at that one point where Rick left the human behind and just completely buried himself in his character.
Yeah, here's what's surprising. They actually got to interview his first wife for this documentary.
Who was very frank.
Yep.
She didn't sound bitter.
Oh, she was bitter. She didn't sound it, but she was. Okay.
I'm sure she was, but she was at least, you know, she at least was willing to put it aside for the sake of the story.
Mm-hmm. But honestly speaking, she deserved to be bitter. Rick is not a good guy. Okay.
And by his own admission, he knows he's not a good guy. But it took him 40-something years to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a ton of drunk Ric Flair stories.
Oh, yeah.
Like the infamous airplane in the robe naked story.
Well, yeah. And that was actually touched on in story time.
Right.
I didn't know about the college version of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Welcome to the fraternity. Yeah.
Am I surprised? No.
No.
As someone who was on a college campus for 3.5 years, nothing surprises me about fraternities.
Nope.
So.
Yeah. Excuse me. I was younger and stupider. Trust me. I've been there.
So, you know, we got the drunken Flair stories, but we found that, you know, even though he drank, even though he slept around and he really gets around, I believe the numbers he gave were very conservative.
He said 10,000.
That's conservative for 30 something years.
I think he's full of it.
You don't think he slept with that many women?
Even the director said he stopped counting up around after 1500.
Still, it's a lot. Okay.
I think he's probably throwing a number out there, and I still think he's lowballing it. I also think he was lowballing the alcohol, but we're not going to know for sure until we go and see if he actually has a liver left.
I think his liver is like, you know, not it ain't there.
Yeah. I don't think he has a liver anymore. There's nothing left to damage.
No.
And we see how much the character consumed him to the point that WrestleMania 24 was not bittersweet for him. It sucked.
Oh, yeah, they touched upon that. And, of course, when we get to that part, they'll talk about the prior, after the first retirement.
Well, he joked about the multiple retirements they did to him in NWA and WCW. That's also chronicled in The Rise and Fall of WCW. Mm-hmm. Jim Herd hated Ric Flair.
Yeah.
WCW in general hated Ric Flair and would humiliate him every time they went to Charlotte. But somebody needed a ratings bump. Whose phone's ringing?
Rick. And he would do it, too.
Yeah, so spend time chronicling his talking about his WWE run in the very early 90s.
Mm-hmm. They
and
touched
how happy he was doing it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad this the Hogan interview was recorded because I have never seen Hulk Hogan that humble.
Yeah, even
Do you
Hogan
think
said
he
he was the best ever.
meant it?
Hogan, I think Hogan summed it up nicely. Ric Flair would travel, would travel all over the place and do 1 hour matches, would do 1 hour matches on a regular basis. I have never done a 1 hour match.
Yeah, that's
Hogan
true.
acknowledges he does not have the he's a, he that he can wrestle, but he doesn't have the move set, psychology, or storytelling skills to go a solid hour. And an hour is going to feel like 6 hours when you're actually in the ring trying to do the match.
What's amazing to me was, first of all, they also had a very good segment about him and Steamboat.
Oh yeah,
That was gorgeous.
that was a good
Yes.
one.
And I wish I could, well, no, I wanted to hear what Hogan had to say, what Hogan would have thought about the, no, Hogan did say something about it. The fact that the card got changed at the last minute for whatever reason.
Oh, that they were wrestling on house shows leading up to WrestleMania 8, I think. And then they changed at the last minute.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they were doing it at house shows, but that's called getting ready to do it on TV. At least that's, maybe the house shows, had a different reason during those times. I don't know.
I saw it once. I actually saw Hogan Flair at the Garden.
Okay. And
It was all right. I mean, there was some sort of DQ involved because there was no clear winner. But I'm sorry that it didn't happen. I mean, you caught the potential brilliance of what it could have been. Okay.
Yeah, but
But
in the WWE.
yes, that's why. Yes, in the WWE. And you got to see first, and you got to hear reactions about that from people like Shawn Michaels, Jim Ross, if I may segue just a little, I apologize, Nikki. Jim Ross, Undertaker. I'm like, holy crap, they got him? I was like, holy crap, right?
And it's interesting that Undertaker is weighing in on this because he and Ric Flair, I think, ran into each other one WrestleMania, and that was that ta that w that was that atrocious tag team match
Oh, yeah.
with that was so bad that a long retired Arn Anderson had to go in there and do that magical spine buster to make us forget that the match sucked.
But they made up for it
18,
in it.
yeah.
But they made it. They made up for it with that beautiful brawl at what is it, 17?
So it's one of these things. You've got a legend in the business, and you should go talk to other legends. We don't have Dusty to talk to. We can talk to Steamboat, who had an awesome match with him, and had probably had several matches with him in NWA WCW in the 80s.
Sting.
Sting, who was essentially, who the torch got passed to, or tried to anyway. And you could hear the bona fide gratitude in Sting's voice. If it wasn't for Ric Flair, what would Sting have been?
If I remember correctly, and please, my history is a little bit. Wasn't the match that made Sting one of the first Flair Sting match at Clash of Champions that was a 45-minute draw?
Yeah.
Yeah, 88.
And I got to see it I got to see it through Chris's show through pay-per-view, and it's an amazing match. And it's I think it holds up. And so Sting has every right to be thankful. Again, there is no Sting if there was no Ric Flair. And Rick staying with WCW up until 92, they made a point about that. Rick may be a drunk. Rick may be a heavy socializer, to put it mildly. But he was also mindful of his friends and other people in the business. This is a guy who didn't mind laying down for others because it didn't get asked of him often. And that he was so popular and he was so well known and he was such a draw that he helped elevate the business before the Monday Night Wars exploded in the late 90s. There was always competition between the two companies. And yeah, I joked that the Monday Night War actually started in, started in the mid late 80s. So we get to see all this stuff with the wrestling, and then we can take a we turn around and say, well, wait, this man has a family.
I tell you what, you one part was kind of a little stinging. That was when they interviewed David.
David has 10 times the right to be bitter.
And I'm going to quote him real quick if you don't mind.
Please.
I don't want my children to have the kind of life I had.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of
He's
course,
going.
Shawn Michaels, going back to what Shawn said, Rick doesn't even know Richard Fleer. I don't think he's ever taken the time to get to know who he is.
And to a point, he still really hasn't.
And honestly speaking, I don't think he wants to.
No, because that's, Ric Flair, the legend looking at this dude Richard Fleer, it's kind of like Thor looking down at the good doctor that housed him early in the comic book series.
Right.
And then Rick had another quote that's notable here. Talked about not being home from, I think, early 80s to 1999.
That's hard. But
I think,
he's.
yeah.
Go ahead.
I think it was after that break, like in between the program with Sting and the presidency and with Diamond Dallas Page on WCW TV in 99, I think. They forced him to go home.
He needed to go home. Somebody needed to. I hate this. I guess this is the best way to put it. Somebody needed to be Ric Flair's dad again. Somebody needed to be the. There had to be somebody above Ric Flair to say, "Hey, you, stop that shit."
Yeah, we'll get to that, but it's a little further down the line, actually, in his story.
He, wonderful career. Yes, he. Yes, we know he has multiple wives because women. When you marry somebody, you kind of want to see him once in a while, And if he was home long enough to have kids, although he was probably home just long enough to do the deed and probably couldn't make it for the birth.
Let's see,
Pretty much.
four ex-wives, three living children. He is engaged to the former Fifi on the old WCW TV
Which I
program.
couldn't, I was like, holy crap. There was so much holy crap in this documentary,
It was, and that, and some of it was, a lot of it was bad holy crap, though.
Tell you what, here's another one. The woman who played Baby Doll.
Yeah.
She didn't age well. Sorry.
Dude, some of us don't age well 30, 30 years on.
Yeah, I know. I know. We have
Hi,
to.
Tony Schiavone. Oh, sorry.
No, Tony looked fine. He just looked fat.
By the way, happy late birthday.
That was probably the greatest night in the history of your sport.
Can't
Oh, hi.
believe the dude's 60 now. That's weird. But yeah, they interviewed him about 20 minutes in for the piece, talking about that airplane story. and the robe and all.
And what was also interesting was he talked about the fact, oh my God, pardon my language, but he talked to a sports psychologist. And because
this is good.
That was brilliant. All I could think of was Dean Ambrose in The Regular Psychology.
Yes,
okay. It was the same skit.
Okay, so what happens is that he talks to a sports psychologist. I think he was either sent to one or he talks to one. He says, "Well, what do you do for fun?" He says, "Well, I drink 10 beers every day, 5 mixed drinks, and jerk off twice a day." And the guy goes, "What?" He says, "Yeah, I drink 10 beers a day, 5 mixed drinks, and jerk off." And he said, "How are you alive?" He says, "I don't know."
Don't look at me, man. You're the doctor.
Yeah. Tell you what, props to the guys who did the little cartoons that reenacted.
Oh, the animation.
Everything.
Yes.
The animation was awesome. That was pretty good. I would like that style also be used on story time.
Now, I'm not a big 30 for 30 watcher, but do they do that for every documentary, Jay?
I don't, for all the ones that I've watched, I've never seen it.
No, I don't think so. All I know is that for me, that was just, I mean, the animation was great, but I'm just, and then they taught another drinking story. They said was, you know, Jim Ross told the story. He says he came back one hotel. He said, "I want 127 kamikazes." And Rick says, "Why don't you just have one drink?" He says, "I can't do one drink." So he was serving drinks, and he says, "I think Rick just wanted to be with someone." You know?
And that makes a lot of sense.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
Attention is a hell of a drug.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still addicted to it. That's what I believe.
No, you're not wrong. He's, you know, he was, you could see how, he was excited. He was trying not to show it, but he was really excited that he was getting interviewed. He was really, you know, he was really animated for that, for doing that. He wanted to, you know, he wanted to be there. He's like, cool, there's going to be cameras on me again. People are going to ask me questions. People are going to listen to me. Pay attention to me.
It's not like that, though. It's not like that. How can I put this? You can tell that wrestling to him is the most important thing to his life, no matter what he says about his kids or his family. And I don't mean that to be rude.
No,
that's what it is.
No, it's not rude if it's true.
No, he's been in for almost 50 years now, right?
Almost.
And he wrestled for 40 of them. So, I mean, he started in 72.
And stopped
2000. The second time in 2011?
Yeah, they should. They got their hands on some painful crap from TNA.
Oh yeah, they did.
Yeah, where the word was old man ass was in full effect.
Let's go back a little bit though, real quick, if I may.
Yeah, sure.
One thing that kind of disappointed me just a little bit is they only spent maybe 2 or 3 minutes talking about the Horseman days.
But they hit the most important part of it. Rick, you know, Rick was very loyal to those guys, and you know, I'm sure that WWF kept backing the truck up to Rick, and he wouldn't leave because he had Arn and Tully and Ole.
Yeah, that was something we never
knew. And JJ Dillon, of course, don't forget him.
That was something we never knew also, that he had offers in 86 and 88 to go. And he turned them down.
So, and it's, you know, and you know, this has probably happened with, you know, with other legends. I'm sure Sting, you know, even before WCW folded, Sting had, you know, Sting probably had a couple of offers. Undertaker might have had a few offers to go to WCW. But Rick, like I said, for all the other warts, he is very loyal, very giving. But to make sure he maintains that attention, Hunter said in not so many words that at times Rick is a lying sack of shit.
Oh, wait till you hear this quote. When he talked about forcing Flair to go to rehab, finally.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah, but that was due to, for a very distinct reason.
Yeah. Let's just say a couple of F words were used.
That doesn't surprise me because you have to. It's the wrestling business. That word gets conjugated frequently. That word and gimmick are probably the two most heard words in a locker room.
Well, what had happened is that Reed, God rest his soul. Yeah,
that's still tough to talk about. You could see it was still hard for him to talk about.
Reed should have been the wake-up call to Rick because Reed wanted so bad to be his father. He was even doing the bad shit.
The drinking and all.
The drinking, the drugs, the partying.
With Charlotte, by the way.
Yeah, that was a little revealing, too, as she mentioned that she was used to party with Bree, too.
And that was her wake-up call. As she said, she had no intention of going into the business, but once they lost Reed, she's like, I know that's what he wanted to do. And I know it's hard for Rick. What few clips we saw of Reed's amateur wrestling competitions, Rick looked just ecstatic.
They also showed a couple of his Japan matches, too, clips from that.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, Rick was a happy man. But then again, the spotlight may not have been on him directly, but his name was still getting dropped, so that's attention.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's still a huge loss. You know, what could have been? You know, it's the crazy crap that Reed would be doing right now.
Yeah.
And maybe we still would have gotten Charlotte. But it gutted Rick because he saw his legacy in Reed since they completely fucked it up with David.
What am I doing? I'm kicking your ass, boy.
What are you doing? What does it look like? I'm kicking your ass. Yeah, somebody who was not, who just plain old wasn't ready. And Reed wanted it, you know, wanted it like nothing else. Wanted it as much as his father ever wanted it. Sorry. Wanted as much as his father wanted it, but unfortunately was doing it almost like his father was doing it. And that doesn't work with everybody. And Rick put it himself. I am sorry that I was your friend and not your father.
And that sent him, what he said, and then the director asked him, did you ever find joy again? He says, no, I drank myself into a stupor for a year.
And that's where Hunter's like, you're fucking going to rehab.
I'll do what the fuck I say. That's how he put it.
Yeah, you will.
Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, like, you will do what the fuck I say. And let me just tell you something. Hunter looked pissed when he was talking about it. He really did.
Rightfully so. Ric Flair, it's well documented that Hunter is an NWA mark and is a Ric Flair mark. There are pictures of Hunter early in his career sporting that same platinum blonde hairdo.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Although his was longer, of course.
Mm-hmm. Not that I minded. I mean, it wasn't just about the hair.
And he has imitated Ric Flair in many, you know, he's done the Flair flop. He's exposed himself.
He's had his own. He had the Hunter Hearst Horseman. I mean, Evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought Rick in to be his J.J. Dillon. At least I saw him as J.J. Dillon for them.
Yeah.
So Hunter being a teetotaler, him being, you know, he doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke. He,
for real? He does not drink at all? Ever?
You
oh,
never,
yeah, that's right.
You've never watched Thy Kingdom Come.
Oh, no, I did. Oh, yes. Hey, designated driver.
So, Hunter doesn't do any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to get a little deeply psychological, I think it bothers him that he didn't do all this stuff and he wasn't as successful as Rick was. Here is his idol, a broken shambles of what Hunter remembered of him. And Hunter's been in the business long enough and he's lost enough friends. It's like, the hell I'm going to lose my hero. I know what he needs to do. He knows what he needs to do. He just doesn't have the balls to do it.
So I'm going to kick his ass for him.
So you're going to do what I fucking say, or I'm going to come down there and I'm going to drag you there myself. And he would have.
Well, you know he would have.
Hunter would have showed up on Rick's doorstep, punched him in the face, thrown him in the back of the car like Vern Gagne did all those years ago, and drove him to rehab. And would have stayed in the parking lot
For the weeks. He would have slept there.
Yeah. He would have stayed in the parking lot to make sure Rick went in, stayed in there, and came out.
Clean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, this documentary, I think in post-production, I think where we talked about the health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was interesting is that you saw a couple of times. By the way, he drives in. You see the car he drives now? A 650 horsepower Camaro ZL1, by the way. Did you check that out? I caught it.
Yeah.
Flair's got a flair.
Yeah. But you notice when he works out, his skin up there is so soft, he touches it and he bleeds. Mm-hmm. Remember we joked about he sneezes and he hits a gusher? That's the truth.
It's true. He doesn't, you know, they showed him, I think he was just washing his face and it came open.
Mm-hmm. Many
yeah.
Times he did the blade job over the years.
Right. He doesn't have a big visible patch scar like Dusty does or like Muda does, but the skin is so thin and damaged up there, it doesn't have any, it can't hold anything in place. You know, it can barely hold the blood in it. It can't hold any hair. That's why it doesn't have much anymore.
Mm. So Rick gets over. And then we flash forward to we flash forward to that wonderful Ric Flair Triple H match for the Intercontinental title, I think, at the time. Or was it for the world title?
Well, heavyweight title.
It was for the world title because Hunter gave him that. Hunter gave him that. He'd had several matches with Rick, including still my favorite, and it wasn't for anything. I don't think anything was on the line. But Hunter was in a goofy mood. Flair put him in the figure four, and Hunter is selling it like his legs are being broken. Sell, 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 sell. Sits bolt up, you son of a bitch, and goes right back to selling. I'm going to find this match. I finally found the
2007.
It was somewhere in there. I finally found the match with the dork ass spot. Mm-hmm. So,
but again, that world title match, the one where I think it was a birthday celebration afterwards too, or they gave him the belt
after
anyway.
After Raw went off the air that night.
Yeah.
It was amazing. That was one of the best matches of his career in the WWE.
Mm-hmm. And it was a great big thank you and happy birthday match for him. You know, you got your head on straight. You know, you're back with us now. We're gonna have some fun. And you know, because Hunter, like I said, Hunter is not going to let his hero go, you know, go out the way he was going, the way it looked like he was going to go out.
And he also need to find a match. It was 2003. Around the time Kevin Nash came back, it was around the summer of that year.
Okay. So this was before all the Reed stuff, but still.
Oh, way before.
But, because, I mean, God's, you know, random memory in my head. I went to a WCW event in early 2000.
You talking about when the storyline between Russo and Flair and all? Yeah.
Reed was there, and they were out there playing football. They were throwing a football around in the parking lot.
Yeah, that summer, that's when the Russo versus Flair storyline ended with the hair thing.
Yeah.
And Reed was part of that storyline.
This particular show, this was before all that really blew up. This was in spring of 2000. I think Reed was just traveling with them, and I think they were formulating the storyline because I don't remember Reed coming out. This was the Nitro right after Uncensored, the night that Sid chokeslammed Hogan and my inner smark emerged.
Yeah, he wasn't used on TV back then.
No, like I said, they were out throwing a football around in the parking lot, and I remember the football went astray and almost hit somebody else who was on their phone, who got mad and kicked the football across the parking lot.
Mm-hmm. But so, you know, so Ric Flair is reborn for those last few years. And then we have 10 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be 10 years ago in April.
Oh, yeah.
The retirement match with him and Shawn Michaels.
And I enjoyed the comment. If you could write a script on how you retired Michael Jordan, if you could write a script on how you retired Joe Montana, or whoever else. He mentioned two other very elite athletes. This is what you would do. And that was a spectacular match. That is a spectacular finish. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. For the thousands in attendance and for the millions watching at home, if you had a dry eye that night, you did not understand.
No. And the next night after, which we saw, you know, the goodbye, and then, of course, the off-air stuff with The Undertaker
mm-hmm.
and Vince.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately for him, the mistress kept calling. Now, do you think that was the mistress, the money, or both?
It was the, I want to say it's for the money, but he went to TNA.
Yeah, I think they interviewed Ross for that. He said he had to go back because of money.
Because, you know, Ric Flair was having all the fun, but he needed Richard Flair to pay the bills.
Yes. Yeah. There you go.
And guess what? Richard Flair's never home.
As we said earlier, I don't think he ever has been.
No.
Well, now he is.
I think Ric Flair killed. Okay. Put it to you this way. If I may use you, Nikki, and I'm not going to use your government name, just say
that's
okay.
Fine. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay. But you, for the most part, are Nikki. Okay. Mm-hmm. You live your gimmick. Okay.
I do.
But you do understand that there is another side of you, the side we don't talk about much.
Okay. No, there's the side that actually says, hey, you know, that's awesome. I'm glad you're having a good time, but rent's due and your power bill's due and congratulations that your car payments are a year ahead, but get your ass to work.
Yeah, exactly. Richard Flair died when he was 18. In my opinion.
Vern Gagne murdered him, running him up and down all them stairs. Oh.
Excuse me. You ain't wrong, though. Okay.
I know. That's kind of cruel, but I'm not wrong.
No, you're not.
No, you're not.
You're not, because Ric Flair is Richard Flair. Richard Flair is not Ric Flair. If you understand.
No, that I understand. That I understand.
And he's got, put it to you this way. Whatever religion you have, that man is watching over him, because let me tell you something. With all the partying he did, with all the drugs that he did, with all the sex that he had, and I don't mean that to be funny, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he didn't get a disease, as far as we know, and the fact that he is still alive, is a miracle. Don't you think?
It is. You know, I remember a joke about this. A guy had a picture of his uncle on the wall. And they asked him about his uncle. He says, well, my uncle drank and smoked every day, and his doctor told him to stop doing that, and he'd laugh and drink and smoke twice as much, and he lived to be 103. When did his doctor ask, tell him to stop smoking and drinking? Day after his 102nd birthday.
Very nice.
So, you know, the fact that, yes, if Rick's numbers are true, and I still think he's lowballing, how this man is still with us baffles me. How this man still has a functioning brain, functioning liver, and functioning manhood.
Viagra, maybe. I don't know. But
Viagra. Ric Flair invented Viagra. Anyway,
No. What they did, they used a drop of Ric Flair's blood to get the chemical formula.
Yes. Sad but true. If they didn't get it from Hef, they got it from Rick. Anyway,
Woo! Woo! We also found out that was from Jerry Lee Lewis.
Not surprising. Mm-hmm. Not surprising. He referenced Ali, who was influenced by Gorgeous George. You know,
but
this is how the art of the promo developed, and how Ric Flair, you know, Ric Flair was a master. He admitted, I have the gift of gab.
Yeah, I mean it's. But honestly, though, I felt sorry for him in a lot of respects.
I have trouble feeling sorry for him because he did this all to himself.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That is true.
And what I feel sorry for him about is that I still don't think he's fully 100% repentant. I'm going to defer to Hunter on that. Because Hunter has had to do shepherding before. Scott Hall, X-Pac.
Nash.
Occasionally.
Michaels.
Yeah, Michaels before he found God, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Hunter knew what he was getting into, and, you know, even outside of the ring, it's a scary prospect when Triple H has had enough of your shit. I wouldn't want him mad at me IRL. In character, I think I might survive. IRL, he would... Ooh. Ow. So, but yeah, this was the documentary we needed about Rick.
It's too bad it wasn't a little more.
They could have gone for days, to be honest. Because, yeah, I really would have liked to have heard more. You know, I'm glad they got Arn and I'm glad they got Tully. Is JJ Dillon still around? I wouldn't, you know, I think they should have rung him up.
Yeah, he's still around. They didn't contact him for this documentary.
Maybe there was also a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor. If they ever release this on the DVD, maybe they will have an expanded edition of this.
Yes, I'm sure they will. SportsCenter afterwards played a couple of extra clips last night on it. I didn't see that, though. I was in bed.
I didn't see the extra clips, but I did see that Scott Van Pelt actually got a bonus interview with him.
Well, Flair was doing interviews all day yesterday on ESPN programs.
So, yeah, they did a thing. They did a thing with Scott Van Pelt, and this is how ingrained Ric Flair is in mainstream. Even today, although this kind of happened a few years ago, Scott himself says he's not a huge wrestling fan. He's not somebody who chases it and watches it every day. He doesn't have time. He has to chase all sorts of other sports ball stuff. But when he was talking to Flair, Flair paid him several compliments and referenced Stu Scott. Stuart Scott, who got a start at WF TV Channel 9 in Orlando. Thank you very much. God love him. God's got him.
Wow, you yes. did, mm-hmm. I didn't know you knew Stu Scott. Okay.
I was happy to watch him do his thing on ESPN. I didn't, you know, we usually turn half the time we turn off the news right after the weather. So, no offense, but. I know where I know his roots.
Cool. Stu Scott, great, great dude. Great dude.
I wanted to meet him and I wanted to meet Dan Patrick. I still want to meet Dan Patrick. I don't want to meet Keith Olbermann because I'm going to punch him in the nuts repeatedly.
You're not the only one, but that's a story for another podcast. But yes,
that's a whole different show. But the point of my bringing this up is that Scott Van Pelt got to tell Ric Flair his Ric Flair story.
Aha!
That he had actually, you know, early in his ESPN career, he got a chance to meet Rick in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Rick knew who he was. A celebrity recognizing you.
Uh-huh. Nice.
He kept it professional, but when he got out of the building, he marked out like an 8-year-old. Holy shit, Ric Flair knows who I am.
Woo!
Woo!
And Flair is still big enough sports today.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they also showed how many times, and they showed the stuff from
how many football locker rooms? How many football huddles?
Give me two, excuse me, kiss stealing, woo, wheel and dealing, woo, son of a gun, keeping these alligators on.
It's insane. And actually, thank you for reminding me of something. They brought Snoop Dogg on, which I thought was an odd choice. And he had an interesting insight. You know, this is the style. This is what everybody wanted to be. This is what people where I was growing up wanted to be. And that's why Ric Flair was always a part of the black community.
I'm like, when I heard that, I'm like, shit.
I had to pause for a minute, and I looked at Ric Flair. You know, tanned but white, platinum blonde hair, blue eyes.
Southern, Minneapolis boy.
And he's part of y'all's community? My brain hurts. I mean, I get what Snoop Dogg was saying in the fact that a lot of rappers, when they hit it big, they were doing the big fancy coats and the limousines and the women and the booze and the drugs. Maybe Ric Flair was a vicarious, you know, was part of that vision that they had for themselves when they got famous. I don't know.
But I do know this. Ric, as you said, this was not a sugar-coated documentary by any stretch of the imagination. This was hard. It was sad in a lot of ways.
It was hard. It was sad. But this is looking through it. This was looking at Ric Flair's life through the harsh reality of a camera. Cameras are neutral. You can lie to the camera, but the camera's going to show you that you're lying.
But here's the interesting question, as I asked before. Even though Rick had the surgery, mm-hmm. even though Rick had the as you said, is he truly repentant? Is he truly giving up everything that made him himself?
He has to if he wants to live. The trick is, will he? I've noticed, though, that Hunter's probably put his foot down on some of this and why Rick is not typically at Charlotte's side. I mean, I get it. I get why we don't see Brett with Natalya all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Natalya essentially is doing Brett.
Yeah.
Mm. Except for the crazy cat lady part. That's her touch. Anyway.
Hashtag two paws.
So, Charlotte is doing what Rick wants to be doing. And now Rick can watch that and live vicariously through that. But you know, you can take a wrestler away from the ring, but you can't get the ring out of the wrestler.
Yeah, they touched upon Charlotte's first Divas title win.
Mm-hmm. And Rick was there, and as well he should be.
Yeah, he was.
And, you know, he was there when Natalya and Charlotte had a match in NXT. And
yeah, when Brett was there too, yeah.
And every time he was there, he was grinning from ear to ear because the spotlight might not be on him, but he had something to do with it. So now he's getting attention.
And the thing is that Rick is part of that last generation of wrestlers. Him, Hogan, and others.
Mm-hmm.
Who were part of a different era.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the driving, you know, the working 7 days a week, flying to Japan three times, and he said drunk all the way through. Okay. Crazy stuff.
You know, you got in your car, you drove 300 miles, you did a double shot, you got back in the car, you drove another 300 miles, did another double shot, and somehow you still had to find time to eat, work out, and sleep. I mean, it's not, the workout part isn't as important back then as it is now. I mean, you still had to be in shape for sure, but... You know, you look at how everybody looked back in the 80s, and you look at everybody now. Just saying. But you don't have a lot of guys anymore that go out and party. You don't have a lot of guys that go out there and drink. The guys can't go out and do drugs. They'll get fired. And the sleeping around part, there's just something, you know, some people still find that as a distraction. But now a lot of the guys are more than content to drive to their next location or get their flight to the next location, get where they need to be, sit around and talk TV or talk video games and not get in trouble.
Well,
Xavier, sit down.
You got something to say?
Xavier, there's a reason that your name starts with X. Sit down.
Or, depending on this week, Kevin, Sammy, you got some explaining to do.
That's something we'll cover on the upcoming episode. But it sounds like they went into business for themselves, and you don't do that in the biggest company on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have not seen this documentary, find it, watch it twice.
Yes, and we do have the repeat schedule as of now, if I may.
Please.
It will be. And by the way, it was the highest rated show on Tuesday night. It drew 1.8 million viewers, 1.831 million.
And ESPN was so kind as to start it at 9 p.m. right after SmackDown.
Gee, I wonder why.
What? I would no offense to Rick, but I would have stuck for the main.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It will be on tomorrow night at 8:30 on ESPN2. That would be November 9th. And November 19th at 10 p.m. on ESPN. That would be Sunday night, 10 p.m. ESPN.
So, if Survivor Series is boring you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, man.
Yeah, while we do our live cap there, you can watch it again.
Yeah.
And I think the ESPN app, I think, might have it on demand, too.
Yeah, the Watch ESPN app, yes.
So,
as long as you have a cable provider that's participating.
Well, like I said, my DVR caught it for me. I've watched it. And I can watch it again at any time I wish until I delete it from my DVR because because Comcrap won't let you drop stuff to DVD.
Yeah, I caught half of it on TV and the rest of it on the phone.
And I watched it. I watched it this morning when I got home. Oh my goodness. But yes, highly recommended.
Very important watch.
This is a.
If you are a fan in any way, shape, or form, you must watch this.
And, have a Kleenex handy. Or make sure there's no onions in the room. But watch. It's a cautionary tale that every wrestler needs to watch. Between this and the wrestler film that was produced some years ago, that's what you need to see before you set foot in the ring. So for Jason Block, for Carl Chenier, and for our missing Australian. Sorry, Shane, we got to wrap up. My name is Nikki Heyman. I do recommend this highly. Go watch it. And don't forget to tune in for our next episode of NAWC. Good night, all.